Thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring our fine show. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. Saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Thursday, April 26, 2018. I am Eric, is Tristan, and joining us today are Fantasy Sports Research Associate Kyle Soppy and editorial watchdog Leo Howell. And I'm under the understanding here that Soppy is actually producing, Tristan, so watch what you say. Okay, there could be like a beep.
He's going to mute us! More...
Well, if you could sing a song, like, you know, welcome, thank you, know, a new position for you, and you're helping us out, and nobody wants to produce this anymore, that type of thing. I would like to hear.
I'm here for the long term, so
I got it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many producers we've gone through over the years. I mean, it's just one after the other. I mean, Anthony did a couple shows, and we had Gabe last week, and years ago, like, I don't even remember how many years ago, there was this guy, before he became famous on the football show, that was, I think his name was David or Dirk or Daniel. Daniel, I think. Dopp, something like that. He was producing. So we've gone through a lot of producers here on this show, and basically we've run out now. So they took our researcher.
Watch out, Kyle, because it's like the Spinal Tap drummer here. You know, check your chair, you know, look above you, watch out for falling objects, don't walk under ladders. Seriously.
I was going to say this is more like a red shirt thing, too. Like, we're just getting into Star Trek territory. It's dangerous.
Oh, man. Yeah, oh, man. A thing that Kyle's probably
Leo.
Never watched.
Zero sense
for
what you guys
Leo might
are
be producing
about.
Monday.
Well, and I'm wearing a red shirt today, so now I'm actually super worried about the prophecy I just put on myself. So.
No, don't, no.
All right, now we're just wasting time. Lots to get to on today's show. A couple kids are in the major leagues. A couple veterans are doing stuff we didn't expect. And, of course, later on, your combo meals and your hash browns. So here is the buzz. All right, Tristan, we got Ronald Acuña in the major leagues. His debut was on Wednesday. I think it went fine. He had a single and five at-bats. The kid should have been up weeks ago. Whatever. But he's here now. He batted sixth. I see a scenario where he moves up to quite anything, really. That lineup looks like it's fluid at the top because Ozzie Albies is awesome and Ciarte gets on base and Freddie Freeman's terrific. But, I mean, really, Acuña could bat anywhere from 2 to 4, too. He could move up in the order. He should be rostered in every single league. What are your expectations?
A nice balance of rotisserie categories. The big takeaway from yesterday's game was he's fast. If you had any doubts about it, he is an awfully fast player. Kind of in the way that I think Buxton was, except that I think that there's more intrigue in terms of the balance, higher batting average. I think he's a little more likely to give you consistent stolen bases. Eric, you and I have talked a lot about Buxton. We have some doubts about whether he'd meet the high stolen base expectations for him. And I don't really care where he bats in this lineup anyway. As you said, he could slot any of those spots. If he bats 2, that gives him a few more plate appearances per game. Maybe it gives him some more runs scored instead of RBI. But slotting him in 6th, as he is in today's lineup, I mean, that's a pretty good spot for a rookie to be in. I'm looking at something like 15 home runs, maybe 25 stolen bases. I think he could bat 280-something, and I think there's definite upside from there. You?
I agree. I agree with everything you said. 15 homers, 25 steals, those seem like reachable totals to me. We know his ability is tremendous. Nobody's saying he's Mike Trout, but he's not going to struggle. He's not Buxton. I mean, he's got play discipline. He's got legit power. He can play center, but on this team, he plays left field. I think he can back cleanup right now. They could split Freeman and Markakis in the batting lineup. You know, this Jose Bautista thing is ridiculous. He has to bat lower. Swanson could bat lead. You know, they could move Swanson up. And Inciardi's not even getting on base. They could have Inciardi, Swanson 1-2 in some order, and Acuna 3, Freeman 4. Atlanta's going to be really good when the pitching comes. When Atlanta and Philadelphia get their starting pitching to the majors, watch out. These are potential dynasties. Quickly, your dynasty rank on Acuna, I don't want to overrate it, but is he top 20?
I kind of want to put him there. I feel like I could probably find 20 players I like at least as much as I do him, but it's in the conversation. And I mean, it's actually going to sound pessimistic to even throw the number 20 instead of 10 right off the bat, because I saw a lot of dynasty leagues that drafted fresh this preseason where he was going as a first-round pick. I thought that was a little aggressive at the time. I mean, he's an awfully young player. He's not really at his prime yet. I mean, we don't even know how good his prime is necessarily going to be. But I think you start at top 25 and you start inching him forward depending on how many names, how many good young prime-age players you find in that tier.
Rank Albies, Acuna, and Freeman for a dynasty format.
Do I want to put Acuna over Freeman?
Thinking Albies. I mean, I think Albies already has 7 home runs, and he could probably steal 25
over Acuna. I'm taking Acuna over Albies.
I think it's close. I think I would have Acuna outside my top 10. But the point is, like, in a dynasty format, I think you take both of them over Freeman, who's a first baseman who doesn't run. Don't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that Freeman gives you numbers that you could get elsewhere, and he plays a position that you could fill pretty aptly elsewhere. I mean, Eric, you and I have mentioned that first base isn't rich with elite prospects, but guys often shift over to that position, and it does fill it. So I think from a strategic standpoint, it probably makes more sense to build around Acuna and Albies. I think from a rankings angle, based on Freeman being in his prime and having a few years left of it, I think it's smart to go Freeman, Acuna are right there, and then Albies is a little behind.
Speaking of rookies, your Yankees called up Gleyber Torres after our last show. I wrote a blog, I don't know if you read it, where I said I'd rather have Miguel Andujar. Is that crazy? And what do you think of Torres moving forward?
I mean, from the short-term perspective, And I want to make sure I get this right, because apparently it's Andujar. Miguel Andujar is a guy who I think is going to give you a little bit more this year. I feel like the Yankees are probably going to be a little bit more in need at the corner spots between having Drury and Bird, and Drury's having the migraine issues, and Bird with his injury history, that Andujar could get some opportunities. Torres gives you some homers, gives you some steals, respectable in batting average, but none of those things is elite. None of those things is polished right now. I do wonder. I'd probably disagree with you and rank Torres higher here, but I see the point.
And that's just for this year, okay?
Yeah.
But like,
long term, it's different.
You know, long term, absolutely. I can't make any case against Torres, but for 2018, my point is, and I try to do this in my blogs, where everybody just thinks of one thing, and I'm like, well, wait a second, what about this? Andujar, I think, has a better shot at 20 home runs. I think he's a better shot at playing time. If Torres has a Scott Kingery run over the next 2 weeks, he's probably back in the minors. Okay, that's the other thing. Mm-hmm. They can play Neil Walker at second. They have a lot of options there. So I'm just saying, while everybody's adding Torres, Andujar might be the better option short-term for 2018. That was my point. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a lot of bad feedback either, so maybe I was right. Speaking of your Yankees, Didi Gregorius, we have to reassess him. I mean, what he's doing is crazy. He's got 9 home runs already. He's got almost twice as many walks as strikeouts. He's batting in between the tall right-handed batters. And I guess that has some role here. He's seeing different pitches. But if we were drafting today, isn't Gregorius like in round 2? Is that too generous? Or
yeah,
do you see this falling apart?
That's too generous. I mean, remember.
Why? This looks like a 40 home run guy right now batting between the trees.
There's no chance of taking him over Lindor. And Lindor is going to be in that tier. Let's understand what the top 20 means right now. It's the 4A starting pitchers, and there's a lot of prime age players. But to your point on Gregorius, and he's going to be my biggest bust of the guys I said I was not going to draft on my team. It's pretty clear that Gregorius is going to be my biggest swing and miss this season. He has done the thing I wondered he would do, and that is go all out uppercut. He is going completely swing for the fences. The hard contact metrics are up. Career high 38%. His fly ball rate is 50%. His ground ball rate is a professional low 25%. He's a different player.
Why is this not sustainable to some level? Obviously, he's not going to knock in 200 runs, and he's not going to hit 60 home runs, but why can't he, and I do this a lot, why can't he hit 40 home runs and bat 300?
Because I think he's the type of player who's going to pick between one of the two. If he's going to hit fly balls at a 50% rate, fly balls are converted into two outs. The easiest of any of the batted balls, obviously pop-ups a little bit more so, but that includes the fly balls and those calculations. I think that if he hits 40 home runs, he's likely going to be a 260 hitter going forward. I mean, I don't think he can sustain this sort of batting average with that extreme fly ball rate. 313 BABIP is very high for a guy with this batted ball breakdown.
So where do you rank him? Is he in the top 50? We do updated rankings, you, me, and AJ, yeah, and Nass, for different formats here. And again, on this show, we generally talk about straight rotisserie ranks, even though our game base is a head-to-head points, right? So where, let me check what AJ has him, but where do you have him ranked? I'm curious now, because I've got him in my top 50. He's got to be by now.
Well, I actually don't. I don't want to get that far ahead on putting him in my top 50. You know, I'll be honest, Eric, I want to see him do it on the road. All these homers.
Do you think this is because of lots of home games?
I think it's contributed. I also think that the swing is crafted perfectly for the ballpark. It's why I talk so often. I mean, Brandon Belt, we talked about on the last show, has the kind of swing that would be perfect in this park. That is exactly what Gregorius has turned his swing into.
Right.
I need to see consistency on the road. I do think he's, put it this way, he was 130 for me in the preseason. He's definitively top 100 for me now. I'd say top 75, 50.
I have him 36. I have him number 36. And I update every Monday. And he is my number 36 player, number 7 at shortstop. So I still have him behind Corey Seager and Lindor and Bregman, but not by much. This looks like
final numbers.
Superstar to me.
Final numbers for him.
35 home runs, which, I mean, it means he's only going to hit 26 in 5 months, which he's certainly capable of. 100 RBI. Sails past that. I mean, he's already got 30.
The lineup spot is huge. I did not anticipate that. I did not think of the idea
I think
that he
we
could
did.
There.
We did. He hit cleanup last year. Why wouldn't he hit cleanup again?
Because with the guys they added, I couldn't see it. That's one of the reasons I was not going to draft him, is I thought that he capitalized on the good lineup spot. I should have.
I'm going to say 35 and 110, and he bats 300. And if that's crazy, it's crazy. Let me ask you about a new guy, although we've seen him before. I wrote about him yesterday. I'm just trying to write about the most popular things that people are talking about in general here. But Mack Williamson of the Giants. 3 home runs in his first 5 games with the team. He's always had power. He's never had power. He did his swing in the offseason with a special hitting coach, the guy who fixed Justin Turner's career. And most people don't remember. Justin Turner was barely in baseball. 5 years ago, right? When he was on the Mets, he was a utility infielder who had no power whatsoever. And then he went to the Dodgers and he fixed his swing. He started to hit with loft. He hit the ball harder. I don't think Mack Williamson's going to bat 300 like Turner, but this looks like a guy who, I mean, obviously pitchers will react to him. Are you buying on Mack Williamson?
I am, because there's an explanation behind it, and we went through this last year with guys like Yonder Alonso and Justin Smoke, and that is that Williamson's got an explanation, and that is that he worked with a specific swing guru named Doug Latta, and what they did was attempt to kind of firm up his swing path. They tried to improve that one. So when I see a player like this who's producing good numbers, given another chance in the majors, who has an explanation as to what changes they made, I'm apt to buy. I don't want to go all in here just because I think Williamson's had a little bit of an injury history throughout his pro career. That's one thing that worries me a little bit. But the actual production on a per-game basis is something that does intrigue me. I think that this is worth even an ESPN 10-team standard discussion. I think he's the stash juice, the orange guy right now.
Would you rather have Mack Williamson or Jed Lowrie, who's been a top 10 performer so far, but we know his history of getting hurt?
That's a really
now it's going to be really tough for anybody to cut Lowrie when he's a top 10 guy on the player radar. But yeah, don't you think that Williamson can sustain power more than Lowrie? I do. I know it's only 1 week and you might think we're crazy, but something tangible changed with this player. That's what the difference is now.
See, you're picking two guys who have injury history, so it's very difficult for me to say. I mean, You're going to throw the two names in a hat, draw one, and it's going to end up being correct based on injuries. In Williams' case, I guess the reason I'd lean a little bit more towards Lowry is just a little bit greater history in the majors. And Williamson does still have the 50% ground ball rate. He needs to get, I think, a little more elevation to keep up these homer metrics. But the hard contact's been pretty good.
Shohei Ohtani of the Angels, two good starts, two bad starts. What is he going forward on Houston? He faced Houston on Tuesday, 5 1/3 innings, 4 runs, a lot of walks. Everything's changed. And I personally think that the reason things have changed is not the blisters. I think the two good offenses said, lay off the splitter. If we take some called third strikes, so be it. But lay off the splitter and make him throw us strikes. And 101 miles per hour is great, but if you can't command it, and he only sometimes has in the recent outings, Ohtani doesn't look so good now. Where do you... I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think that's exactly what they're approaching here, which means that I think the matchups had an awful lot to say about this. I think there's going to be more impatient offenses coming in the future weeks that he's going to capitalize on, so it gets better from here. But, Eric, as you said, I think that he's going to need to make adjustments of his own. I think he is one of the pitchers I'd trust to do them a little more quickly. But right now, 39% zone rate, that's the 39% rate of pitches he's thrown just being in the strike zone. That's pretty low. Pitchers like to get somewhere in the range of 50%. You see guys who are a little bit over that in certain times, and a lot of times I think they're the types like Doug Fister who put a lot of balls in play, but you want him to be in the mid-40s at the very least. I think that's going to have to be a definitive improvement, and as you said, the splitter is key.
Ohtani versus Yu Darvish rest of the season.
I'm going to go with Ohtani. I have to consider the possibility in a daily league you can slot in Ohtani for his hitting stats. That does move this
just pitching.
Bit.
Just pitching.
Yeah, if I'm doing that, I'm still going to give the slight edge to Ohtani here. I've ranked them really close to each other, too.
I have Ohtani quite a bit higher. I have Ohtani as like the number 17 starting pitcher, and I've dropped Darvish all the way to number 26, which might be crazy, but his command is a mess. He starts again on Friday. I wrote about today. You realize that four of the top five free agent pitchers this winter pitched last night, and there's been differing results here. I mean, Alex Cobb has been awful. You can't make any case to roster him. Lance Lynn, much more of a case, although I would try to stash him away. Arrieta's looked great, but the strikeout rate is going to be lower than we expect. I don't know. Just some random thoughts. I thought it was interesting. And then Yolis Chacin, who you don't want, and Darvish. Anyway.
Great. This is a great point because this dawned upon me as I'm watching the Alex Cobb game. The first thing I thought of was exactly what were they doing in order to keep themselves game ready leading into spring training. And one thing that struck me about what struck me about Arrieta was this: is I remember the report at the time he signed that he had a specific plan going in, that he was ready and he thought he could be in the first round of that rotation. And I took note of that. I wonder. I'm not attempting to criticize these guys. I have no idea what they did during the offseason, but missing a chunk of spring training, I wonder.
Does it matter, though? I mean, the conclusion I came to in my blog was that it's different for every player, and we can't just say, bottom line, next year, if the free agent signs on March 20th, that means he's going to be bad in April. I don't want to assume that. Arrieta's been fine.
I don't want to assume it either, but you know, Eric, I'm one of the biggest proponents of the ramping up and ramping down pitchers. I do not like guys just jumping into the mix. I do not like guys just being shut straight down. I'm very big into having a plan over the course of the year, and if you have a delayed start to spring training, that impacts the schedule. It's why you and I talk so often in the WBC years and spring training, why we worry a little bit about these guys. Changing their plan.
Their routine has changed. I agree. And when my routine changes, it affects me too. All right. Only one guy's done this in the last 3 days, but here are the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal. Combo. Combo. It's a combo meal. Home run plus steal.
Wow, this is crazy. Only 20 players last season, according to Kyle, reached 3 combo meals. Trevor Story has reached it in the first 3.5 weeks. What do we make of this? We know Trevor Story can steal bases. He stole bases in the minors. The fact that he hasn't done it a whole lot in the majors doesn't mean much of anything. I saw somewhere on Twitter, like, he's been as fast on the bases as some of the top guys, like Billy Hamilton types, on stealing second base.
Is that right?
Do we have to reassess? Yeah. Do we have to reassess Story?
He's fifth on sprint speed, by the way. So, he's legitimately fast.
Yeah.
Huh. There's your geeky stat.
But he's not legitimately patient at the plate. So he's not going to hit, I don't think, above 250. And I don't want to reassess that. But if he has 25 home runs and steals 20 bases, then I don't care if he hits 250.
Yeah, the steals are what are interesting me much more about Trevor Story. But this is the height of streakiness. I mean, was it two or three shows ago we were talking about how he had had a massive run of strikeout games? He had the Golden Sombrero game, I think, the night before that show that we taped. And this is what he's going to be all year. But if he does get those 20 stolen bases, that's going to make a pretty big difference in terms of the shortstop rankings. And I'll tell you, Eric, one of the problems I have with it is that it gives him a competitive chance at being in the Gregorius tier, I think.
Well, I'm not going there yet, but all right.
But in the preseason, I'm going to bet you ranked Story ahead of Gregorius.
Oh, yeah, but something changed. I don't know if I did, actually. I realized that a lot of people didn't think Gregorius could hit another 25 home runs. I did, and I've never been high on Trevor Story. So I don't know if I did, actually, and I don't even know how I'd find out. More sounds. Let's do a brief closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
Who will lead the Atlanta Braves in saves this year, Tristan?
I got to go to Vizcaíno just in the absence of an obvious alternative that I think I'll blow.
There is an obvious alternative.
Who?
AJ Minter saved last night's game, and the manager after the game clearly said he's going to go matchups in the ninth inning. Votto and Scooter Gennett were up in the ninth inning. Minter throws with his left hand, as all the best people do. And I think, I will say Vizcaíno gets more saves than Minter, but I don't think Vizcaíno is getting 30 saves.
Oh,
I think he's going to end up at like 22 and Minter gets like 14. I think Minter is in line for saves now.
I love the numbers. That's exactly where I was going with this, is that I don't think there's a 30-save reliever here. In Minter's case, I love the stuff. I'm with you, Eric, on that, but the command numbers have not been all that sharp so far.
Yes, he's a walker.
Well, I think with his stuff, he should be able to have better control than this. I don't think he's a walker to this extent, and it bothers me that, yeah, he had this good game, but before it was one that was all over the place. I want to see better consistency.
Reminds me of Jake McGee. He can throw strikes. He can get a lot of strikeouts. McGee could have been a closer, and he was. I think this guy is in major danger. Like, I have a trade offer in our office league to trade away Brandon Morrow for, I think, Charlie Morton. And my first thought was, of course. But then I have Vizcaíno. I have Fernando Rodney.
Oof.
You know, I might be without saves soon.
You've got my points league closers. I'm not feeling good about it, so I know how you feel.
I mean, I think Morrow's going to get hurt at some point, but... You know, I could be at risk in saves, which is why I haven't made the trigger. I might do the trade anyway. The other I have is Glacius and the Reds. You know, who knows? I could trade him in a month. Houston, Ken Giles got the last save. I think he's getting like 25 saves, but I bet he doesn't get a lot more than that.
I feel they're going to be about the same numbers you just threw for the Braves. I think that Giles is going to have a number that starts with two, and it's in the low part of that 10 tier. And I do think Devenski could get into the double digits.
More saves this season, Greg Holland or Mark Melancon? Or is it a 0-0 tie?
I'm not a Melancon. The injury worries me. I mean, I'm terrified of the injury with Melancon. I'd have to go Holland here, but not with excitement.
I don't think Melancon gets any. I think Hunter Strickland keeps the job. And
do you think Melancon pitches
the
game?
Not this month.
Right.
Maybe not next month. I think he might be done. Briefly looking at the schedule. All right, Chris Archer going today against Dylan Bundy. That's pretty interesting. Archer off to a terrible start. You know, he might be a little overrated. He gets a lot of strikeouts, but like in a Samardzija type way. ERA and WHIP have been high the last couple of years. You tell me, Chris Archer still in your top 20 starting pitchers, or are you running away?
He is because of the natural strikeout potential, but I've had this very thought every time I go back to do re-ranks. I'm feeling like 25 is the natural number, and the problem is I have a hard time finding 25 or even 24 names to put ahead of him.
You remember how Evan Longoria used to always kind of get drafted based on talent and never really lived up to it? I wonder if Archer is now just that Ray that everyone's going to overdraft until he disappears into obscurity.
Ooh, that's interesting.
I mean, it's a lot of strikeouts. I mean, do you think they trade him? They're obviously not going to the playoffs this year, right?
He's always a candidate to be traded for sure. But the problem is that he's not putting himself in a great shop window with the ratios he's been posting.
Also today, Mike Clevinger on the mound, who was one of my preseason faves. And he's good. He's facing James Paxton, who has not been good. Who would you rather have the rest of the season, Mike Clevinger or James Paxton? The answer will be telling, I think.
It'll be telling. I'm going to take Paxton here, but
that's telling.
How's it telling?
That's telling.
Okay, what's it telling of?
Well, I have had a problem trusting Paxton over the last couple of years. One, I don't expect close to starts. All right, he's never had more than 24. Performance last year was tremendous. Performance this year, it's a lot of strikeouts and a lot of inefficiency. My concern with Paxton is that if he goes all out for these strikeouts, not that he's just not going to go last long into these games.
Right.
He's got one win in five starts. I have a hard time seeing him win 12 games again. That's all.
Yeah, and I don't believe that Paxton's going to give you a healthy year by any means. He's actually one of the injury riskiest pitchers of the guys that people do generally trust. Clevinger, what bothers me about him is this, so far, small sample, pretty steep drop in swinging strike rate, because the reason you want Clevinger is strikeouts. I don't think he's great in any of the other categories. I think strikeouts are the hook, and they're down.
All right, so Archer Bundy is on ESPN Plus at 7:05 p.m. Eastern tonight, so you can check that out there and you know, watch it on your smartphone and watch the draft on ESPN. That's what I'm going to do. Friday baseball, Yu Darvish on the mound at Wrigley Field at home. My concern with Darvish is he's showing the same lack of control that he did when he first came to the Rangers. And if he's going to walk 80 batters, that whip's going to be 135. That's my concern with Darvish. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. The walk rate is a definitive concern here. The matchup is also because Milwaukee's got some bats, and it's in Chicago where you never know the Wrigley Field conditions. I don't like what I've seen so far. He's still missing bats, but to your point, command, not there.
So, Tristan, the Brewers, without Eric Thames, it looks like they're going to try to play Jesus Aguilar at first base regularly, which means that Ryan Braun and Domingo Santana are still kind of platooning a little bit, which is weird. Do you want to add Aguilar in a standard league?
Probably not in a standard league, but I like the guy, and I did at the onset of spring training, despite the cluttered roster here. I think Aguilar can hang in there against his own side right-handedness. Yeah, I think if it's a 12-plus team mixed league, I think I'd take a look.
Sean Manaea on the mound Friday at Houston. Do you expect it'll go kind of well? Nobody's expecting another no-hitter. 6 innings, 3 runs. Would you take that?
I'd take that. I think that's a very fair projection, yeah. Manaea's going to get my okay. I actually just wrote a piece on him where I do think some of the improvements that he's made are going to pay decent dividends. This is probably one of the worst matchups he'll have this year, but it's a go for me.
ESPN Plus on Friday night. It's Yankees at Angels, Luis Severino and Andrew Heaney. So you can check that out on Saturday afternoon. Sal Romano of the Reds at Minnesota, Jake Odorizzi. So the Reds get the designated hitter, which means they can play all four of their outfielders, which is interesting to me in a deep league. I mean, Scott Schebler and Adam Duvall are both in there. Concerns about Duvall. He's not hitting, not making contact. We had concerns about his batting average the past 3 years. Seems like this is the year he does not hit 30 home runs.
And my big concern with Duvall is that he's shown a history over the past 2 years of cooling late in the season. His second half numbers have been noticeably down from the first half. If he's starting this year with poor numbers, I wonder whether that's the start of the slight decline phase of his career a little bit later, you know, arrived as a prospect a little bit later in his career. And in this weekend series, the fact that they're getting that extra outfield bat in there could give them some hints as to younger players they might want to play more often. I'll tell you this, Eric, just to go on another tangent, I think this is an interesting weekend series and game in order to watch Eugenio Suarez's return. I'm surprised he's back so quickly.
I am too. I thought we would see Nick Senzel in the interim. We did not. But as long as Scooter hits and Senzel doesn't in AAA, this is the way it is. The next minor leaguer, the hit, you know, after we've already seen, you know, Torres up and Acuna, I think it's Senzel, but it may not be for another month or two. Doubleheader in Kansas City on Saturday, so get your White Sox and Royals in there because that's a lot of games there. This is interesting to me. So Jason Vargas comes off the DL Saturday night at San Diego. Jason Vargas versus Joey Lucchese. Lucchese's already been on the most added list. Vargas will be if he pitches well. Who would you rather roster the rest of the year?
I'm going to go with Lucchese and his upside here, but I worry that it's going to be he gives you like 5 to 8 more good starts and then you got to get rid of him. Vargas is just playing matchups, and I like this one, but I think it's going to be tons of homework all season.
Jack Flaherty is back for the Cardinals supposedly on Saturday. That he's very interesting. It's at Pittsburgh, although runs have been scored at Pittsburgh recently.
Yep.
How about that?
Yep.
But Flaherty should be really good. Flaherty, I know you love Luke Weaver. Are you running away a little bit or no? Or who would you rather have, Flaherty or Weaver?
I'd rather have Weaver than Flaherty. And I think they're going to keep Weaver in the rotation. I think they're a little bit more locked in with him than they are Flaherty. In Flaherty's case, this is probably going to be a one and done where he's demoted after the game because the schedule allows them to kind of manipulate the fifth starter. They think they're going to get Wainwright back. I wish I'd looked ahead like 10, 15 days beyond this week to see that that was why they pushed him back.
And speaking of pitcher manipulation, the Dodgers will start Walker Buehler on Saturday, and then he will be demoted, I think, right after the game, right?
That's he's the 26th man, yeah.
Right, so Walker Buehler, one outing. So if you drop somebody good to get him, just be ready. On Sunday, Buehler will be back in AAA. Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, you can't miss it. It's fabulous. CeCe Sabathia at the Angels, Tyler Skaggs. Can't make much of a case for either of these fellas. But if you're in a head-to-head and you need one start on Sunday, do you consider either or both of these guys?
I'm not so terrified of both pitchers that I'd avoid them if I was desperately trying to play catch up. If I'm going to pick between the two, I'll take Sabathia. I think that the Angels lineup isn't quite what the Yankees is right now.
All right, we thank Hims for being a sponsor of our fine show. Did you guys know that 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? Luckily, I'm only 29. So, but you can never start preparing too early. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, I'm told it's too late. It's always easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Is that hairline slowly starting to move backwards? Any bald spots yet? So here's the question. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? Well, the solution, of course, is 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. And thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions that are backed by science. And there's no waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. That's F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com. Answer a few quick questions. A doctor will review and can prescribe you products. They are shipped directly to your door. So order now. Listeners to this fine show get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy, but go to 4hims.com/FFB. That's FORHIMS.com/FFB. 4hims.com/FFB. Oh, look at that. Wow.
What do we call that?
I do like Dan. Is that Daniel or Kyle that did that?
I found the
Who
button.
Who wants to get on my good
I
side?
I found it.
See, Kyle, you can stay.
Yeah,
I like
you. I'm trying.
I've heard. That's the lady with emphysema, so she must have recovered. She must be doing well.
Thursdays. Yeah, Thursdays when Kyle's here, she recovers.
Okay. Has she had 3.5 Tommy John surgeries?
Wow, isn't that a great story? Johnny
it
Ventures.
Is. It is.
Congrats to him. That's, I mean, look, when you have two Tommy John surgeries, we assume that it's going to be a real rough road back. And then, you know, the surgery, what is it called that Matt Harvey had? I'm sorry. It's just,
thoracic outlet syndrome.
Yeah. Whenever that surgery comes up, you have to assume that it's worse than a Tommy John. But Johnny Ventures is back, and we hope he does well.
You know,
it doesn't have to always be about fantasy.
One of the things I love about that story is that let's not forget how unbelievably good Ventures was as Craig Kimbrell's setup man for those two seasons. I think he had like roughly two, maybe 2.5 WAR in each of those years.
Right. So he got one out against Baltimore. He's on Tampa Bay now. It's 6 years since he pitched in the major leagues. And Ventures was a major strikeout guy. He had 93 Ks, 96 Ks in consecutive years with low ERAs and whips.
Yep.
It's really good. I mean, could this be like Mike Minor, all of a sudden the guy who's back?
Yeah, I guess. I think they're going to use him like a traditional, you know, lefty specialist where they're going to...
A loogie.
You can say loogie, but I can't.
Wait, is that a word we can't say?
No. As I remember I said loogie last time. You're like, loogie, what? How could you say
Look,
that?
Let's think, there's
I
a
know.
Teenager okay. producing. We can do whatever we want on today's show. Nobody's
hey
going to stop
now.
Wow!
I mean, the watchdog probably isn't even listening. Is this a football show?
I'm laughing and slapping the table. Like
it's a race pitcher. Of course, he's listening.
All right, Kyle, we got some questions that people want to answer. What are they?
I don't know. You keep throwing around insults like that. The question count's going to be going down.
Watch out for the mute button.
We love you. Come on.
I appreciate
you're the best.
That. Well, we got a question from Eric on the Twitter machine. He wants to know if Mookie Betts is ready to join the elite tier with Trout and Altuve atop the hitter list.
Eric, how can you ask that?
I don't want to remind people of my preseason rankings, but I had Altuve 1, which now looks ridiculous. Trout 2. I had Mookie Betts 3. And most everyone had Betts down at, 7 or 8? Tristan, where'd you have him?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, originally, before the Humidor thing, I had Goldschmidt, but I might have had Betts 3rd. I'm looking to give you the exact answer.
You did not have Betts 3rd. I remember looking.
I loved Betts this year. I absolutely loved Betts coming into this season.
You were among the many
Item
people 4. Who said, look what he did last year, not what he did 2 years ago.
Nope. No, I did not at all. We had that discussion. I absolutely did not. I said that it was completely fluky, and I was all in.
All right. Well, yep. I
4th, right I, there I, with Arenado, I, same price.
I have him 3rd, or I should. I mean, I have Harper up there now. So I think the top tier is actually Trout, Altuve, Betts, Harper. I think that's the top tier. I mean, if Harper wants to keep stealing bases, and he's found some way to keep healthy for 150 games, then of course I wouldn't run away from him. The problem is Harper's had one good season out of 6, one good fantasy season out of 6, elite fantasy season.
Mm-hmm.
But Mookie Betts, why can't he hit 32 home runs, 26 steals? I can see that.
I won't it's not fight a reach. You on those numbers in the slightest.
All right.
I love the guy. I think he's showing us the dividends that I would have expected. The hard contract plays last year and the bad luck on them. I mean, his batted ball distribution on those hard contact hits last year was noticeably down. I think he had like a .265 BABIP on hard contact line drives or something. It was absurd.
Maybe he had an injury too. I mean, we knew about Bogarts' injury. Maybe Mookie had something wrong and we just didn't hear about it. All right, next.
Sweet Man on Twitter knows he has to deal Jed Lowry, but he's looking for an indicator of when is the right time to deal him away. He wants a stat or some sort of trend to be looking for when the decline is imminent.
I mean, you should have dealt him last week. And Tristan, there's no number here. The numbers on his batting line all look legitimate. The number to get here is that he's averaged, 100 games over the past 3 seasons? And also, the big number is I wrote about this a week ago, is his April splits, his April OPS is 150 points above his other 5 months in cumulative. So, I think that's the number where you just say, and the other thing is, who's really buying or accepting Jed Lowry? None of your leagues, Tristan, would you be able to sell Jed Lowry for anything legitimate, would you?
Nope. I'd have no chance.
I wouldn't. I mean, Lowry's, you can't.
He's the lock-in and enjoy-it guy.
I don't see what you could get. I mean, if you want to trade Mac Williamson today, you could get something. If you want to trade Didi Gregorius, you could get something. I don't know what you could get for Jed Lowry. What are you getting, Miles Mikolas? I don't know what you're getting. So keep your expectations in check. That would be my answer.
I don't argue, by the way, Mac Williamson. I don't think you're going to get anything for him either. I think that's another lock-in and enjoy-it.
In a dynasty league, I actually traded Jed Lowry for Joe Musgrove. That's the sort of value I think you can get.
I like that. And that's good.
I don't know that I would have done that. I mean, but if you need the pitcher, that's the right value point, probably.
Mm-hmm. I'm rooting for Mac Williamson, not so I could say, hey, you were wrong. But I think he can hit for power. He always had power. He's a big guy. And these home runs are not like little pull shots.
Who
was
wrong?
He hit 464.
But who was wrong and on what?
Oh, no, not today. We don't know anything yet. It's been a week.
Right, I know, but I'm just saying,
if Mac Williamson has 15 home runs in July, I think you need to be more open-minded to the fact that this could be something legitimate.
I am.
That's all I'm saying.
Let's roll the tape back. I was pro-Mac Williamson. Look, I love these stories. I was a huge Justin Smoke supporter last year. I love the changes he made. I mean, this could be Williamson this year. You got to love these, just as a fan.
And by the way, we just answered the hash brown from Jared there. Mac Williamson, what are your thoughts? We just gave our thoughts. What's next there, Kyle?
You're a true professional, Eric, taking care of everything. Jordan wants to know, Billy Hamilton's value was so dependent on his batting order spot coming into the season, and now he's batting in the bottom 3rd. What do you expect from him the rest of the way? Can we even count on his speed anymore if he's that low in the order?
I find this question strange. And a lot of people were panicking when it was obvious that Hamilton was not going to lead off, and he shouldn't lead off. He has a .277 on base, And his career on base is .297. I don't care if he's fast. He's 5 for 5 on steals. He's clearly not running as much, but that's ridiculous. The reason he's not running is because he's not getting on base. It's not because he's batting ninth. I don't think. You did a report, and you've updated it over the years, Tristan, where I think what the result was is you debunked the theory that lineup spot matters a lot for stolen base potential. Obviously, if you bat ninth, you're going to bat less over the course of a season than if you bat first or second. But we've seen guys batting fifth or sixth that can steal bases. I think we've seen guys batting eighth in the National League ahead of the pitcher that still steal bases. I think Billy Hamilton can still steal 50 bases this year. Don't you?
I do. I think that's all he's going to give you. And I think it's going to be harder for him to get there batting low in the order. So, Eric, to the point about the lineup spot, yes, it really didn't make a big difference. What actually did contribute was the style of player and the team's decision as to the need for him to be a contributor with the bat. So, for example, Hanley Ramirez, when he was a leadoff man early in his career, when they moved him down to the heart of the order, they wanted to use him as a hitter and they didn't want to risk injuring him on the base path. So that's the time that they give him more red lights. Lower in the order, that typically from 1 to 9 looks like a minimum of 75 plate appearances. And I believe it's more than that. It might have been 90 or so over the course of the year. And for a guy like Billy Hamilton, an accumulator with a low on base percentage, that's going to lower his potential for stolen bases. I mean, we would have said 60 plus a year ago, 2 years ago. 50 now is tempering our enthusiasm we might have had in the past.
Well, he's never stolen 60 in a season. The reason why we were down on Hamilton entering the year is A, the lineup spot, and B, he wasn't guaranteed to play every day because they wanted to play Jesse Winker. And Winker has like a .450 on base. Winker should be leading off. It shouldn't be Hamilton.
Yep.
I don't think the reason why Hamilton will fall short of 50 steals is because he's batting ninth. I think it's because he's never on base. In his past 7 games, he has 3 singles and 1 walk and 1 steal. He doesn't get the chance to get on to steal bases.
The thing is, though, that losing that one plate appearance to start the game there, it does make a pretty big difference for a player like this.
But, you know, Rajay Davis still manages to steal 35 bases every year. I think Hamilton's going to end up with around 40 steals. I do. That's my...
He's supposed to get 60 according to the pattern, you know.
Well, yeah, because he went up 56, 57, 58, 59. I think he ends up at like 39 or 40. So that's still valuable. I mean, look, you never should have drafted him in the top 100 to start with. That's ridiculous. He's a one-category guy. But that one category is great.
Yeah.
Dee Gordon's worth drafting in round 3. Hamilton should have been like round 15. But he still should have been drafted. Don't drop him. He's probably being dropped. Let me check.
Probably, just because he's not hitting.
Well, you know, is that the is he not hitting because he's batting ninth or because he's not a good hitter? He's 80% rostered, so people are cutting him, and I can't make... Look, I cut Jonathan Villar last week in a league. Is Hamilton any better now? No.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he really any better as a fantasy option?
Not really, no.
Villar
at least can hit a homer every once in a while.
Yeah, well, he's got like 3 runs scored in 3 weeks. I know. That's why I dropped him.
I hate seeing these guys hit low in the lineup. I want to see maximized steals chances, but that's just the selfish me.
Kyle, what's next?
Every fantasy owner is selfish, Justin. Nobody's looking out for anybody else. Justin says Candelario looks legit to his eye. What are your expectations the rest of the way?
He looks legit to me. I wrote about him, I don't know, all the blogs are melding together in my head. But when you write him every day, but he... The reason why we liked Candelario, it's a switch hitter with modest power. I could see 18 to 20 home runs, but they're batting him second, which is really smart. He can take a walk. Strikeout rate is fine. It's like 21%. He looks totally, everything looks legit here. The BABIP's a little bit high, so 290 might be a little generous, but I would have said before the season, if you told me he was going to bat second for a major league team, it's not a great offense, but it's not that bad. I mean, Leonis Martinez has done stuff in the past. I think Miguel Cabrera could hit like .275 with 20 home runs, but not much more. And Castellanos, we all love. I think Candelario could be a .275 guy with 20 home runs. But if he bats second all year, he could score 80 runs. That'd be maybe his best stat for fantasy.
Yeah, I kind of like those projection numbers. I think he could meet those thresholds. I think he's a capable major leaguer. I think he's got pretty good odds of that. The role, he should hold it. It's the BABIP, Eric, as you said. .389 BABIP in September of last season, which I thought was unsustainable. And now he's got the .343, which I also think is unsustainable, not to the same degree. But he never really showed that tendency in the minors. That's the only thing I'd really nitpick about his performance to date.
Yeah, no, he's a keeper. But is he a top 200 fantasy option? Like, I don't know where I am ranked. Let me check where I am ranked.
He might be in the top 200. I mean, I think he's mixed league relevant, but I think he's going to be firmly a corner infielder, not your top 10 third baseman type.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. Any other questions?
We've got one more. Dr. Van Norstad on Twitter wants us to play a quick rapid-fire game here with a bunch of either-ors. So I'm going to throw two players at you. One-word answer from both of you. Who you want the rest of the way? We'll start with Ryan Braun versus Adam Jones.
Braun.
I'm going to go Jones.
Mike Zunino versus Kurt Suzuki.
Ooh.
I got mine. Zunino by a mile.
Country mile?
That's a mile is crazy. Why is that? Why a mile?
Zunino's power ceiling is so much higher than Suzuki's.
Yeah, and last year Suzuki hit 20 home runs in 80 games. It's close.
I think Zunino's hitting 30-plus.
I'll take Zunino because I agree. 30-plus with like a 240 average. But Kurt Suzuki, that's a legit 20 home run guy now.
I agree with that.
He's going to he's approaching my top 10. And I have Zunino like number 10 at catcher. I might have Suzuki like 11. It's really close for me.
The only thing I don't like about Suzuki is Tyler Flowers.
Yes, I agree. And when Flowers comes back in a couple weeks, they might just split the time. But again, 20 homers in 80 games last year. And it all looks legit. Next.
All right, and last one, we've got Josh Hader versus Adam Ottavino.
Has to be Hader.
Agreed.
Has to be.
Yes.
And Hader will get some saves. Ottavino, I don't see getting saves. Unless, you know, like, I mean, Wade Miller could get hurt. Wade Davis could get hurt. But Hader looks like a 120 strikeout guy with, like, 15 saves. Corey Knebel probably gets the job as soon as he's healthy. Speaking of lefties who throw hard and you don't know where it's like Andrew Miller is ending up in the DL today, I think.
Yeah, that was an ugly.
He is rostered. Andrew Miller is rostered in more than 80% of ESPN leagues. I can't make a case to keep him rostered. I mean, it's going to be an elite 70 innings or 60 innings with 100 strikeouts, but he's not getting saves. I would rather have Hader than Andrew Miller, wouldn't you?
I mean, yeah. Count of the injury, it's the obvious way I'd swing this. I do think Miller is a worthy guy in our standard game of the daily transactions when he's healthy, but right now he's not. I think Hader gives you. What's up?
I think either way, I'd rather have Hader, even if Miller was not hurt yesterday.
But you also, I mean, and I'd agree with you on this one. I think he does have a better chance of the speculative saves, even after Nick Knebel comes back.
I switched my top relief pitcher from Jansen to Kimbrel in my last rankings. So you have like you have Kimbrel like 35 in your rankings. I have him 79. I can't value a relief pitcher that highly.
You'd think I would learn my lesson after paying $26 on Kenley Jansen and Tout Wars. I'm so happy about that. You know what my other closer is, right?
Who?
Corey Knebel.
That's just bad luck. You couldn't have known.
I know. Yeah, it happens.
I mean, if you're selling on Morrow, health reasons. Selling Doolittle. You've seen Doolittle strikeout rate. I wrote this in the closer report on Tuesday. Not the strikeout per nine, but the strikeout percentage. Ottavino's at like 58%, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Sean Doolittle is at like 50% strikeout rate. Where's that from?
Yeah, Doolittle is a weird dude too because he's an extreme fly baller, but at least he's got the good control. I'm a Doolittle believer, but with the injury history, if people want to nitpick. I mean, I'm anti-Morrow because of the injury history. I guess I should for Doolittle, too.
Morrow versus Doolittle.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.
Indeed.
Check them out on Twitter. And that's it. So enjoy your weekend. The NFL draft is for the next 3 days. You got to watch it. And I'm sure there will be multiple fantasy-focused football podcasts in the future if anybody would like to chime in and say when they will be with Matthew and
hey, guys,
Field
I just got here.
Gang.
Are we ready to start the show?
That's Daniel Dock. Wow, what a name from the past. So tell us what's happening with the football podcast.
Oh, hey, we're going to do a podcast April 30th following the draft, looking at all the things that broke down. And then we have the entire Fantasy Summit that first week of May, where we're going to have a whole bunch of content coming to you guys. Obviously, you and Tristan both will be here. And then we're going to do a podcast next week.
Never heard of this sport.
We're supposed to be there next week?
Oh, yeah. By the way, you guys should get hotels. Yeah. Have you booked your hotels yet?
Not a couch.
Well, kind of. Not really. So Bucolic Bristol will be having us next week. So the schedule for this show, the baseball show, if you're still listening, and you probably aren't, Monday morning a normal show, and then next Thursday, the whole gang is in Bucolic Bristol with Kyle producing.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
Oh, man.
We are done. Thank you so much for listening to our show. We really do appreciate it. And please listen to the football show as well. For Tristan, Kyle, Leo, and Daniel, I am Eric. Have an awesome weekend. Everything is
awesome. Draftness.